Hello and welcome back in the second episode with Nathalie Nahai. This is a Dutch podcast, so I will do my introduction in Dutch, but keep hanging on for just a little bit because it's just a short moment and you will continue the conversation with Nathalie. Hallo en welkom bij aflevering 105 van de Anonymous Show, waar het draait om hoe je online meer resultaat boekt voor jouw bedrijf. Hoe je als ondernemer online gebruikt voor meer klanten en omzet. Mijn naam is Hanning en ik neem ondernemers met een team het werk uit handen voor online resultaat. Meer klanten en meer omzet binnen een jaar. Vandaag het tweede deel van het gesprek met Nathalie Nahai. So, switching to English again. Nathalie is a web psychologist, international speaker and author of the best-selling book Webs of Influence, The Psychology of Online Persuasion. And I gotta say, This is just a great book. I have the first edition. I'm getting the second edition. And it is a great book because it has all this information, all these details, and also very practical. It tells you how you can use this for your website, for your business, for your online cases. I'm asking you kindly to buy the book. Not because I want you to buy the book, because I think you will get a lot of information from it that you can use in your business. Nathalie is a foremost expert in web psychology, and she helps businesses to use this information for their website, for their content marketing, and for their products. And she has worked with great businesses. I've named them, and you know, Google, eBay, Unilever, Harvard Business Review, and more. Well, you can use this information. You can use her tips to improve your online presence. Let's get the show rolling.
Welkom in de Erno Hanning Show, de podcast waar je meer leert over de online kant van jouw coachingsbedrijf. Praktische tips die je helpen om vandaag jouw bedrijf online zichtbaar te maken.
I was just looking at your homepage and thinking, actually you have three call to actions, right? So, but the one is the most prominent, that's the blue button, sign up. Mm-hmm. But then you have also the play button of the video and you have the link, see your previous newsletter, which I think, now that you mentioned it, when you just spoke before, is that these of course are all CTA call to actions. But the most important one that you have very clear is, you know, enter your email address and sign up.
Mm. And I think you're absolutely right. But I think in terms of affordance, so... if we're talking about affordance principle, it's when you see a button, that's the thing that you want to click on. Hmm. Typically, it's good if you can have one salient call to action, whether that's a button or it's a play button,
what
whatever
does it
might
mean,
be.
Salient?
Salient means most obvious, so the one that stands out. So on here, if you're scanning the page, the blue is going to stand out more than the other things. And yet, because I know that certain... certain cultures and also depending on your personality, sometimes people want to... try something before they buy, or they want to have a look at newsletter before they sign up because, you know, there's so many newsletters. Is it really going to be something that everyone wants? Possibly not. And if you give more choice in that way and you're enabling people to make their own decisions, it can also help them feel like they want to engage you more. So, yeah, it's always a question of deciding what the priority is and then ordering everything in service of that.
Yeah.
And that's the crucial key.
Yeah, great. You mentioned before split testing. Mm. How would you get more information about the right audience for you by using split testing?
So that's a good question. I think it depends on how mixed your audience is, because I know that some businesses have all sorts of people that are their clients and others are much more targeted. So in the book, I talk about... gender and personality differences, as well as cultural differences. And one of the things that's really straightforward for people to set up is to take out an advert. For instance, say you're going to target personality and you're providing a service to people who are always wanting to try new things. They're really excitable, novelty seekers. These are going to be people who are high in extroversion. So if you want to target more of these people, what you can do is take your ad copy, put out a Google ad or a Facebook ad or a Twitter promoted tweet, whatever your platform of choice is, and then have a control condition where you're just saying what your service is and what the benefit is and the price or however you've set it up. And then in the test condition, you can use some words that are specific to those sorts of personality traits. So in this case, extroversion, you could use the word exciting, new, challenge, whatever it is, and then see which one performs best, and the performance will basically, in this case, probably be the click-through rate that you get and the conversion rate in terms of how many people sign up. So there are very simple, fairly cheap and easy ways that you can start to assess whether these differences exist in your audience. And then if they do exist, you can start to build that insight into the content that you're sending in your newsletter, in the content that you are making on, you know, video posts and your social channels, and even in the blurb on your website and around your products and services.
That's a great way of doing this. I love it because you're using an ad, you're just throwing a little bit of money on it and finding out how people respond, and you throw it in a big audience, but you don't just change your website, because that was my first thing, that you do split testing on website or in your emails. But no, you do it in the ads, and then you send them to website, and then when you find out this ad works better, and you use the language more in your website or in your newsletters.
Yeah, it's such a cheap and quick and easy way to do it, and it means that people aren't risking as much. Because I think oftentimes it's, you know, we think of split testing, we kind of, a lot of people who don't enjoy it kind of go, oh God, well, what have I got to do? Am I going to have to spend loads of money? And actually, you really don't have to spend much money. You can do it quick and dirty. It's totally fine. And then if you feel like there is something to be explored there, then you can hire someone and say, look, we found these preliminary results. We'd like to explore it further. And then you can start to develop it. So yeah, you can take it slowly initially and see how you get on. It's perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm. Your second part of the book is about communication, about persuasions. I think there's two things that I'm really interested in. Well, actually three things, but I'm really into video. I think that, you know, of course, the biggest websites are really paying attention and giving preferences to video, like Facebook. Also in ads, you see that I see at least that my ads, when I use video, have more effect than I use just images.
Yeah.
I see it when I have video on my page, it gets more attention than just a text update. So for me, video is really important, and I've done enough that it's very easy for me. What is it that you think is important when you look at video, what you need to do?
Well, I think the first thing to say, and this is super important, and you'd be surprised how often it gets overlooked, is to create a really compelling thumbnail. Because the first thing that you're going to see, especially if it's on YouTube, for instance, whatever it might be, is the thumbnail. You've got to look at it and think, okay, is this something that I want to click on? And if it's just something like a screenshot that's been randomly assigned from the video that you uploaded, it's not going to be that compelling. So beautifully designed thumbnail that shows people what's inside the video or tempts them, because there's some headline in there that maybe is provocative or mysterious, that's the first thing to do. Then the second thing also is to just optimize the headline, because people have to be able to search for your video. And if the headline isn't provocative, what's the incentive for them to click? And so if you want to optimize your headlines, there are various ways you can do this. In the book, I use a formula, which is just one way of playing with certain things. And essentially, what you can do is use trigger words. So things like bizarre, curious, unbelievable, you won't believe what happens next, like these potentially clickbaity words, you can use them to optimize your headline. But, and here's the massive crucial point, if you're using them to trick people into clicking into your video and getting information that then doesn't deliver on the promise that you made, then it's just clickbait, and it's going to really damage the reputation of your brand over time. If you use some of these words in a way that provokes mystery or engagement, that's getting people to be a bit more curious about the content, and then you also deliver on what you've promised them in the headline, it's going to make the whole experience a bit more fun, a bit more playful, and they're much more likely to find it engaging and therefore want to come back. So yeah, so I think thumbnail and headline are really important. And then the other question that often gets asked is about length. Of course, that depends on what your video is for and where you're finding it, and also the parameters of the social channel. So for instance, on Instagram, I don't know how much your listeners use it, but I think it's capped at about 1 minute. On Twitter, where people are scrolling through, shorter videos tend to work really well. Of course, if people have the sound off, which often they do, and if it's an auto-playing video in a feed, make sure that you have the words written down within whatever image you're displaying, so that people can watch and read as the video plays, so they don't have to put the sound on if they're unable to. So all of these little tips and tricks are things that we probably don't think about, but that can make a massive impact.
I think that the clickbaity kind of subtitles is very difficult for us as Dutch people to do. So we tend to be a little bit, I think probably maybe that's for the British similar. You know, we'd be a little bit more saying, okay, if you're strange, if you're normal, you're strange enough. That's, I think, one of the sayings that we have in the Dutch language. But I think you made a good point there, is that when you have kind of a clickbaity kind of title, for the video that isn't a thumbnail visible, or as a title below the video, you must deliver what you do. What's the title? That's a great point.
Because the thing is, and you know, there's, as with anything, these persuasive principles can be used for good and for bad. And throughout the book, there are moments where I kind of hope to encourage people to use it to help serve their customers. If your goals are both aligned, you're going to end up with a better business, happier customers, and you know, it's a win-win. And so I think with these things, if you can apply them ethically, then you're creating something which is more fun and more exciting and perhaps more frictionless. And you're getting people to where they want to be more quickly and in a more delighting kind of way. And I think that's something which we all like when we feel taken care of and that someone's put thought into the experience that we're having.
Yeah. Images are really important in social media. If you have an update with a photo, with an image, that gets just more attention than one without. What is important in an image when you want more people to see it?
Well, it depends on the platform that you're in, but as a rule of thumb, images with people's faces tend to be more popular, especially on platforms like Instagram. They tend to be engaged with more, they tend to get greater likes, you get greater followers. The other thing that's interesting, if you're not doing stuff around people, is to use an image which, again, like the headlines, will provoke curiosity. So it could be something which hints at what's behind, but maybe doesn't give a complete view. So say, for instance, you are Apple, they used to do this back in the day, and you're wanting to hint at the launch of a new product, you maybe only just show the corner of that product, so the rest of it is a complete mystery. So you're allowing people to have a little bit of desire. You're manufacturing their want to see it more, and so they're more likely to engage with you. I think also things that are a bit unusual or something that comes unexpected. So an image which you might not necessarily understand at first glance, but which is compelling, which works on a similar principle. These are all things that you can do. High contrast images work well. High saturation images tend to work well, so where the colors are quite bright. And then obviously the simple point to make is to make sure that you are using images that are optimized for the right size for the platform that you're sharing it on. So for instance, on Twitter, it's going to be a different size to what it would be on Facebook and on other platforms. So,
yeah, I agree. And then of course, you also, when you do an update on Twitter or on Instagram, whatever, always also make the message that the text that goes with it is you need to make sure that it fits with the platform you're using. Because I see some people, they use now these techniques that they put a post on Instagram and they have a long text with it, and it just breaks off in Twitter because they just sent the same update on Twitter, and that doesn't work.
No, and it might feel like you're saving time, but actually it can really hamper you. I think the other thing also to realize that you can do, and this is a great way of doing things, and many businesses do this, is to batch the way that you manage your social media accounts. So I use Twitter a lot of the time. I check it every day, but at the beginning of the week, I go through a whole bunch of different sites that I like to look at for articles, and then I schedule the ones that I find the most interesting, so that then that way you're putting thought into it, you have time, you can decide what you want to draw people's attention to, and then you can schedule it over the week. And then when people respond to you, you then have a bit more freedom to be able to be more personal and engage on that level. And so I think it can be a really handy thing to be able to do as a business, to schedule content that you want to go out, and then create a bit more of a space for personal interaction when people are responding to those particular links.
What do you use to schedule your posts?
I actually use Hootsuite, which I've used for years. I really like it. And that actually manages several different social channels, but I only use Twitter because that's the one I like.
I agree. I think you should pick the platform that you like the best. Yeah. But I also feel that I see a lot of people on Twitter that, you know, they follow me and I look at their profile and they just send a lot of posts. And so it's just about sending. So they send updates from others to send their own updates, and but there is not a lot of conversation going on.
Yeah.
And for me, Twitter is just a lot about conversation. So I'd like to see a profile where they talk to others and where they have replies and they chat with people. So I'm a bit hesitant of scheduling posts because in general I prefer to just look at Twitter and just see what's going on, see who's talking and reply and go into discussion, a short talk with them.
And, you know, I mean, that's a really important point is the way in which you use these platforms, because people use platforms in various ways. And if you know that your clients are going to be on Twitter and they're actually wanting to engage to use it as a customer service tool, then, of course, that means a completely different approach than if, for instance, you take the one that I take, which is, you know, as a curator of things around psychology, so people know that they can trust that I'm serving them with, you know, little updates and insights here and there. So there are various different ways that you can use these platforms. And I think as long as you are doing it in a way that works for you and works for your business and that is then consistent, so people know what to expect, and that's crucial with social media if you're using it for business, then that's absolutely fine. So I think it really is about finding the best way to make it work for you. And that can be pretty variable depending on the business that you have and the way that you want to interact with your clients.
I must say I have one difficulty that I and as well some of my clients find very difficult to solve and I haven't solved it yet. Is I have Dutch clients. I have Dutch people that I communicate with. I chat with people in Dutch, but I also have non-Dutch people that I communicate with. I'm not a lot of clients, but a lot of people that I talk with, like you, and. I think it's so difficult to choose because when I just would go all English and I've done that for a while, I lose a lot of the Dutch people that I really like talking to.
Yeah.
And when I mix, I also see that a lot of the international people just will drop off because then they see these tweets that I can't understand. I think you have it easy.
I think you're right. And I think it makes – I actually think that it makes for very lazy – design in some instances, and the fact that everyone expects English to be spoken as a business language. So I apologize. But,
No. That was a mean joke.
But it's true. I mean, and it is a difficult thing to work with. And it's the same whether you're it's similar in respect whether you're working across languages or in different time zones, because it does require managing. And I don't think there's necessarily a perfect solution, but something that I think can work quite well is so first of all, deciding how you want to approach things. It might be that you send, say 75% of your clients are Dutch. So maybe 75% of your posts are in Dutch, and you maybe take your top 5 posts a week and you send those out in English, and you do it at the beginning of the day, for instance, so people know that that's what the rhythm is going to be. The other thing that you can do is also post it in your bio and just say, I love talking to my Dutch and my English clients. This is the way that it's going to work. Every day I'll send out the top post, or I'll be online speaking in English from this time. And then people know what to expect. And because you've explained it, it makes people much more comfortable interacting with you in that way.
Great point.
So I think you can absolutely make it work. I think it's just, unfortunately, requires a bit more effort for you.
It does. You mentioned having these images with high saturation, high contrast. Also, when you look at the website, colors do a lot of give away a lot of information, don't we? How what you attract, what you do. What is important about colors that we need to know?
Colors on the website. So typically, if you've got lots of color on a website and you have color everywhere, say, for instance, if you go to wistia.com, it's a video hosting platform, their main color is typically blue, and then they've got all these other colors around. And it really works for them because it gives you a sense of vibrancy, and it's a very friendly company. It's aligned with their values. And so when you go to their webpage, you feel like you get a sense for the company. Now, if you are using color in a different way and you're doing it to attract people's attention to specific calls to action, then you have to make sure that the color that you're using is something which stands out from everything else on the page. And that's an obvious thing to say. And typically people might say, well, should I use a red button or a green button? Sure, test it. But I think essentially, as long as it's high saturation and high contrast and you're using it consistently throughout the site for a specific thing, pick a color that you think is going to work and then you can test it over time. But be aware also, whenever you test anything, whether, well, especially if it's a visual element, that you often end up with a spike of higher engagement just because of the novelty effect, because we adapt to what we're exposed to so that we come to expect the same thing over and over again. So sometimes when you change something, the uplift in clicks or conversions might be used to be due to the fact that it's a new element or you've changed it. So these are just little extra bits to bear in mind.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I think, in general, a lot of the people that I talk to, the amount of traffic that they have on the website is not just big enough to have a really good impression of a test. I think that what you just said before is just, you know, pick high contrast and just pick a color and just go with that and see how it flows for over time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. You have so much information in your book.
it's just too much.
Anyway, let's go to the part with the selling integrity.
Because I've seen presentations of you, and we've been talking about all these interesting stuff. I will link up the videos that we talked about of dopamine and all this stuff, because it just fascinates me how we are tricked by these large companies in scrolling and clicking and all the stuff you need to do. But also, how can you use a little bit of that in your own advantage? And then I mean with integrity, like you said in your last chapter. So what are good things that you see, for example, that Facebook uses or Twitter uses that you could use on your own website?
That's a very good question. So let's pick a principle. Let's say you want people to join your list because you need to build your list in order to get people to try your product. There are various ways that you can try and increase the sign-up rate. So one example that's used fairly frequently is that of social proof. So it basically means if we see enough other people doing something, we're more likely to also do that thing. Now, if you are calling out a specific trait in your subscribers, it might be something like be the smartest digital marketer, for instance, join 500,000 other bright people. I'm being a bit facetious here, but just to make the point, if you can pull out the trait and you create a number, or ideally, this is where the dark side comes in. You don't want to fabricate the number, but equally you want to increase people to sign up. So you have to find a middle ground between what you think is going to be most effective. So for instance, calling out a trait versus if you've only got like 5 followers, you don't want to say join five other people. So you have to frame it in a different way. So there are various ways to use these principles. I think using them to dupe people or lie to people is never, ever a good thing. Don't ever do it. But you can try changing the framing in order to get people to respond and for them to feel like they are getting something that they want. And of course, the other aspect of that, like we mentioned earlier, is delivering on that promise. So if you give people the option, for instance, to try a free trial with all of the bells and whistle of your specific product or service, maybe for 10 days, then by the time someone's used that 10-day trial and they really feel like they've gotten value, they're much more incentivized to continue. And that's due to things like the sunk cost fallacy. So you have invested time and effort and energy and, you've maybe invested a few of your relationships in it by telling your friends. People are much more likely to want to continue. So by actually delivering value to people and using these hooks to get people in to open them up to the possibility of working with you, I'd say that those are the best, most ways of doing it with integrity, ways of doing it in which you're serving people instead of just serving yourself.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. I'm all about results. I the only thing that I'm really interested in is how can my clients get more results, and the result for the client in general is getting more clients or getting more speaking engagements.
Mm.
And one of the parts that you also talk about in the book, and of course, Gialdini also talks about it a lot, is scarcity.
Yeah, yeah.
But then we live in a digital age, right? So
yeah.
The things that we have in general are not very scarce anymore. How do you do that still with integrity?
Sorry, can you say that last bit again?
So we live in a digital age, and so the content that we have is not really scarce. It could be delivered to millions of people. So how can you create scarcity and still be with integrity?
So another great question. So I think one of the things that I've noticed people doing a bit more of in different industries to ours, so still using digital channels to promote their business, but not working in the knowledge area, but you could also do this in the knowledge area in some way if you wanted, is to find ways to create scarcity using things like limited time editions, for instance. So you could say, for this month, I'm giving away this for free, and then at the end of the month, it's gone. Or you could say, I'm doing a special workshop, and if 10 people sign up, then that's the maximum. And so you can do things like limiting time, limiting space on particular courses. There's ways to kind of create scarcity in a way that people are getting what they want, they're getting something that they value, you're rewarding loyalty, but then you're also not just making it available to everybody else. And then, you know, if you want to be more gracious about it, you can always create waiting lists. And so if you're doing another similar thing again in the future, then people can kind of come to that or buy the product or whatever it is that you're using scarcity to promote. So you can create scarcity and do it in an ethical way.
I like the idea of the waiting list, because, you know, they have the launch and this is the one and only time, and then in a year they have the same thing again.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how I feel about that. I think that's a bit manipulative. I think if you do something and you're saying it's the one and only time, then it should be the one and only time. But there's nothing to stop you from doing something a bit different, where people get a different guest speaker or, you know, and I think it is important to do what you say you're going to do, and if you don't, have a good reason for it. So, yeah, that's where I would draw my line.
Right, I agree. another part that this is probably the last part of our talk.
You're recovering.
Really sorry about already now. Yeah. I'm going to miss talking to you right now. the pricing thing, because that's also a very interesting part that it's very difficult. You need to set a price, and you're not sure, right? So you're struggling with determining the right price for the service, or I always call it a product, by the way. And then once you have the price, then it comes down to this: what's the last digit at the end? Is that really important? Yes or no? They often ask me, so what is a good price to do this for? I have no idea. My God, how should I know?
Well, it's like, how long is a piece of string, or what color button should I press? I think all you can do is furnish, and this is the thing whenever you're, you know, in our field of work, all you can do is furnish people with insights that they can then test to see which best fits their needs. So for instance, if someone, as a rule of thumb, if someone is selling a product or a service that is good value for money, so it's something that isn't necessarily cheap, but it's not really expensive, then you're going to want to use a price point that suggests that it's good value for money. So that you can start using charm pricing for. So it could be any number that ends in 99, 98, 95, 97, because we tend to assume that those things are better value for money. And then you might want to round down the figure. So instead of having an ebook that's worth £10, you say £9.99 or £8.99. And research is fairly robust around pricing to suggest that that works in that scenario. However, if you're selling a product or a service that is bespoke, that is luxury, that is high end, that is expensive, and you want that to be conveyed in the price, then using more rounded numbers tends to work better. So it could be, you know, £3,000 or €2,000 or whatever it might be. But then again, you have to be careful, because more research suggests that we tend to look at rounded numbers more positively if we're making an emotional purchase decision. So say, for instance, you're buying like a holiday for a honeymoon, versus if you're buying a product or experience for a logical reason. So it could be you need to go and get a hotel and it needs to be cheap because you're going on business. So there are all of these different factors when it comes to pricing that you need to consider and then test to make sure that you're actually saying what you want to say with the figure that you're giving people. Yeah, that's quite, it's quite a complex area.
It is definitely. But I also see that what they're having trouble with is, you know, should I make it expensive? Should I make it cheap? Right. So do I want to attract a lot of people? Do I want to make sure it's available for just a? And then a lot of people just say, okay, I want to make it cheap because I want to have it available for a lot of people. And I tend to be the other way. I tend to show them the ideas. Okay, so what is the value of what you deliver? What is it? What is it? What the client is going to get? How much is that worth? What if they, you know, if they've used your product and they've solved the problem, how much is it worth to them? So in general, when you do that, you end up with a higher price, and that's what I like to go. I think it's a lot of work to it's about the similar amount of work to sell somebody something cheap or something more expensive. You know, you have to convince them that the product is good, that it's worth the value and everything. So it takes about a similar time. So why not just sell them something that costs more?
Well, I think it comes down to how much people are willing to pay and whether it's good value for money. And, the market will determine the price in that sense. So if you're selling something which is not good enough value for money, then you won't get clients. So,
I agree. The whole idea I have in the back of my mind is that people that I work with, the people that follow me, the people that, the stuff that I do, and the similar thing that what you do is that it is really, you know what you do, you have your experience, you have your knowledge, and so what you give is value for money.
Yeah.
That's my main point. Yeah. Oh my gosh, Natalie, I could ask you a ton of more questions, but I think the one thing that you need to do as a listener right now is just go over the website and whatever website you use to order your books and order Webs of Influence. You could go, of course, to the website of Natalie, which is at natalienahai.com. I will set in the show notes how to spell that, natalienahai.com, and you can find the books right there and you can order it there. But of course, you could use Amazon or whatever you want to use. But do one thing, order the book. And I'm not just saying that because I like Natalie a lot, and I do, but it's so important that you learn the stuff that's in this book, because it will help you to improve your presence on the social media. It will help you improve your website, your newsletter, your the clickable headlines. All this stuff is something that you need to be more to get more results online, and that's what you want to do for me.
Brilliant. Wow, well, what an endorsement, Erno. My goodness.
This is my stuff. This is what I do. This is what I, you know, what I love. I love this kind of information and learn about how you can get more results online, how you get more. The way I see it is, if you do it right, you help more people.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's good. Good.
Thank you.
Well, thanks very much for having me on. It's been a pleasure, as always.
Thank you very much. I'm really delighted you're here, and I will see you next time. And, you know, whenever you have a new book, I will have you here.
Thanks, Erno.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, signing off in Dutch again. This concludes the second part of the interview with Natalie. Did you miss the first part? It is available on Show 104. Look it up on my website or iTunes, my conversation with Natalie, and thank you for listening. Je vindt de namen en links die Natalie noemde in het artikel dat deze uitzending hoort. Ga daarvoor naar ernohanning.nl/show105. Vind je dit nou een gave aflevering? Wil je meer van deze aflevering horen en wil je dat eigenlijk vanzelf krijgen? Abonneer dan op de Erno Hanning Show via iTunes, Stitcher of SoundCloud. En als je daar toch mee bezig bent, want je doet dat gewoon, je gaat bijvoorbeeld iTunes, je zoekt op de Erno Hanning Show, je klikt op abonneer, op het plusje en boom, je krijgt het elke keer in jouw telefoon. Nu je dan toch bent en je vond het een gave aflevering, want anders had je niet geabonneerd waarschijnlijk, geef dan even een 5-sterren beoordeling bijvoorbeeld. Want dat doe je mij en mijn team, maar ook andere ondernemers die deze podcast niet mogen missen, een plezier mee. En het helpt echt enorm als je dat doet. Dank je wel alvast. Ik vind het fijn dat je het doet. Heb je vragen? Heb je opmerkingen? Heb je reacties over deze aflevering of over mijn podcast? Stuur dan een mail naar podcast@ernohanning.nl. En ik hoor graag van jou. Ik lees elke e-mail. Kom maar op. Wil je nu de tips en tricks van Natalie gebruiken? Wil je mijn inzichten gebruiken om te kijken hoe jij jouw online activiteiten kunt verbeteren? Hoe je meer resultaat krijgt online? Boek dan een online resultaatanalyse.
Doe dat op onlineresultaatanalyse.nl. Misschien moet je een beetje geduld hebben, maar boek hem vast in en je staat in de planning. Dankjewel en graag tot de volgende aflevering. Tot snel.
Dankjewel voor het luisteren naar de Erno Hanning Show op ernohanning.nl.